Chris Constantinos is here. He is Director of International Portfolio Management at Riverfront Investment Group. Chris, pleasure to have you on the program. I don't know where to begin. I mean, we can talk about this hiccup in the bond market sending yields a little higher, or the fact that the S&P fell below its 50-day moving average. Take your pick.
I find the sell-off in bonds pretty interesting. And if you had told me, don't show me a stock chart, but you say, look, in the last few weeks, European yield curves have steepened a bunch, and the euro is up a lot. On the back of the ECB sounding a little more hawkish, outside of knowing what the actual chart action looks like, I would take that as a net positive, meaning that. Everyone knows that in Europe the banking system is very beleaguered, especially in particular Eurozone countries. A steepening of the yield curve should be actually a beneficial thing for that sector. The euro strengthening, I think, can be viewed on some level as some of the political risk premium coming out of the euro, which I think is net a positive. And the ECB sounding a little more hawkish, although I'm one of those people that thinks maybe that they were a little misunderstood. Nonetheless, that shows that there's gaining confidence in the economic rebound there. So I don't know that intermediate to long term any of those things are necessarily bad for the region, but it has seemed to have triggered a little bit of a taper tantrum, particularly in the bond market and also in equities as well.
Chris, it's Rich in Hong Kong. But then tell me, what is actually being priced in?
Well, I think it's the fact that central bank accommodation isn't going to last forever. And again, I think, for most market participants, long term, this is a good thing because our markets across the developed world have been artificially, if you will, manipulated by an uncommon level of central bank policy for quite a long time now, for an unprecedented time. Getting back to a more normalized environment, while there might be hiccups and such, I think overall is a sign that, hey, this sort of synchronized global economic rebound that we're noticing across many different geographies is actually starting to take hold. So I think the bond market is pricing that in. There's a lot of us out there that haven't liked bonds a whole lot for the last few years and have probably been waiting for this moment. The fact that it's coming with equities also starting to catch cold is probably not that surprising, but is likely to prove ephemeral nature.
Let's talk about emerging markets at the moment, because according to your price matters framework, you're suggesting they're undervalued. Do they remain so even with this 14.5% gain that we saw in the first half of the year? Is it too far, too fast?
Well, it's a good question, Rich, but our response would be, look at what emerging markets have done over the past 5 years. Yes, we've seen a little bit of signs of life since early 2016 in the asset class, but generally speaking, it's been a lousy place to park money for most of the last 5 years. And even over the last 10 years, it's been pretty disappointing as an asset class. So when you take a longer-term view, which is what our Price Matters framework is designed to do, it does appear to be undervalued. Maybe not quite as undervalued, I'll admit, as developed international, which is where we have a bigger positioning in our portfolio. But nonetheless, EM has been a pretty out-of-favor space. And if you look at the backdrop for EM, our belief is that the current backdrop is relatively benign. We talk about China, obviously, a lot on the show. And if you look at what's happening economically in China ahead of the Party Congress in October, what you see, maybe not surprisingly, is a very stable growth trajectory for China. I think that's the image they want to project to the rest of the world, and that's what's happening not only in the services side of their economy, but even in the old line manufacturing side, where we're seeing strength the likes of which we haven't seen in a couple years. So that's very benign for EM. To the extent that the Federal Reserve doesn't get too far ahead of their skis in terms of being really hawkish, which we doubt is going to be the case, that's also a relatively benign backdrop for EM risk assets. So, yeah, we're cautiously optimistic on EM here with a particular tilt towards Asia.
So the Fed may not be as aggressive as we thought they might have been earlier in the year. They seem to be focused a little more on the balance sheet issue rather than the policy rate. But I'm curious about the outlook for the dollar. I mean, it was kind of interesting today that we gapped up in yields, but the Bloomberg Dollar Spot Index was down about 0.3%. Do you think that the dollar at best kind of trades sideways for the remainder of the year and maybe more likely weakens?
Well, you know, as I've been a guest on this show in the past couple of years, we've had some very definitive views on the dollar in our past conversations, and this is not one of those times. We would say range-bound is probably what we're projecting for the near term, because it really depends on what you look at. If you look at the recent U.S. economic releases, they look a little soft, right? The you know, CPI data the last three times, the Citigroup Economic Surprise Index in aggregate for the U.S. has been on a downward trajectory for much of the past few months. Also, if you look at positioning, you know, just think about how far the U.S. dollar has actually come. DXY has appreciated a whole heck of a lot in the last few years. But on the flip side, if you look at something like real interest rate differentials, it still points, in our opinion, to a stronger dollar. So you put it all together, it's a pretty murky picture, and that's why here at Riverfront, We've really reduced our level of U.S. dollar denominated currency hedging in the portfolios.
So, what do you actually do then, Chris? What are you looking at as the next asset class? So, indeed, are you going to rotate within asset classes?
Well, to us, still the really big opportunity long-term appears to be developed international markets. And, you know, I know we've also spoken a lot about Europe, and certainly Europe's been kind of a hot asset class here this year until very recently. But the general backdrop for let's take, for instance, the Eurozone risk assets. It appears that we're on the cusp of a pretty meaningful positive earnings cycle that's probably multi-year in nature across the Eurozone. We talked earlier in the program about a steepening yield curve for Europe, which I think is a good thing considering what poor shape many of the periphery banks are in. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you look at some of the macroeconomic indicators like PMIs across Europe. That number came out a few days ago and it remains very strong. So, you know, the backdrop for Europe, which is still a place, incidentally, that a lot of foreign investors don't believe in as anything more than a trade, we view it as actually a pretty interesting place to put long-term money. And that's where we've positioned our portfolios.
Chris, I'm just very quickly interested in getting your take on how do you avoid groupthink? Everybody seems to be on the same side of this trade.
Well, it depends on what you look at. I mean, if you talk to a bunch of strategists and guests maybe you have on this show, I think that the European theme is definitely gaining steam. But if you look at actual portfolio positioning on the buy side, at least here in the States, because Europe has seen so many false dawns, if you will, in the last couple of years, I don't think that actual institutional money is really strongly positioned towards Europe at this point.